Hey, I'm Pastor Chris, and the teaching or conversation that you're about to hear is from the student ministry at Cedar Crest Bible Fellowship Church. If you have any questions or you'd like to get into contact with us, please visit us on our website at cedarcrest.church/students. Now I pray that God would use this resource to richly bless you in your walk with Him. All right. How many of you know what light is? No, it's not a trick question. How many of you know what light is? You can raise your hand. Indulge me, please. Okay, good. Light is a very important and vastly interesting reality. Light has many different sources, at least from our vantage point. I'm sure scientifically not so many. You have the sun. Okay, the sun is pretty much our main source of light during the day. And you have the moon, but the moon is not really its own source. Where does the moon get its light from? The sun, right? So much for that. You have stars. You have fire, which burns gas. You have light bulbs from electricity. We have flashlights, overhead lights, headlights, black lights, neon lights, Christmas lights, night lights, etc. Some lights have different functions. Some lights can make you tan. I will never do that. Except for the sun's light, I guess. Some make your teeth and your clothing white and they glow. Some actually make your teeth white. Have you ever done that weird where you go for treatment and you go like this and okay, just me. I didn't go for that. I just have heard of it. Anyway, some warn you that Noah Waterman is coming and trying to get to a fire. All right. Some pull you over. Some say slow down, some say stop, some say go. All right, lights have many different functions. But the greatest function, and I would say the most important function of light, is to illuminate so that we might see, okay? How many of you, I always see on my drive back into Pennsylvania from coming back from my parents' house, coming from New Jersey on 78, the cavern sign on, you know, the big billboard that talks about the caverns. I have no idea where they are. But have you ever gone into a place like that where they shut the lights off and you can't even see your hand, like right here, right? That kind of shows you how important light is. Without light, your eyes cannot see a thing, okay? And here's my thesis for tonight, or I would say one of my main points for tonight. Without the light of Christ, your soul cannot see a thing, okay? Without the light of Jesus Christ, who calls himself the light of the world, your souls cannot see anything spiritually. You are blind. You are dead. You are unaware of your need for a Savior. You are unaware of your need to be satisfied. You are unaware of anything. You might sense something's missing, but you certainly don't know what it is. Lights are very important. They illuminate what is there. They illuminate minor things, like lights prevent dads from stubbing their toes on Legos. Okay? I don't know, Ben, is your son at that age where you're stepping on his toys yet?
Yeah,
it's very painful. Okay? My kids, Courtney and I, have this, you know, at bedtime, they always make a big mess in their room, and I make them clean it up. I mean, it's not my mess. Okay? Sometimes I help them. But when it's really late at night, Courtney always says, "Remember to clear a path." So that looks like me going like this from the door to their bed, in case in the middle of the night we have to go in there so I don't trip and stub my toe. Lights are very important. But lights also do things like illuminating a patient's body so that a surgeon sees what they are doing. Okay, how many of you, if you had surgery, would want the surgeon to use a light? To use a very bright light? Yes, that would be a good thing. Speaking of which, Ian's surgery did go well. There's a card for you to sign on the way out if you have not done that. Light shows us what is truly there. A lot of times we love light. When we're driving, when we're putting on makeup, some of you, when we're watching a night game, etc. We love the light. However, listen, as sinners, at least metaphorically, we love darkness. Sure, there are sins that are easier to commit in literal darkness, right? Like right now at night, a lot of crime happens at night. But there are all kinds of sins that we desire to hide so that others, we think, including God, don't see what's really there, what we've really done. The problem is we ourselves are in darkness and we don't even know it. If we're outside of Christ, we are headed for destruction. But, as I've already alluded to, there is good news. God is light. That's what John calls him in 1 John. God came into the world to display his light onto all of us. He exposes who we really are, what we're really up to, and what's really in our hearts. And there are two responses that you and I can have to his light. We can hate it and hide from it and try to cloak ourselves in more darkness, denying what it exposes, trying to get away from its bright beams, or we can run to it. Now, running for a mosquito going to the light leads to death, all right? For humans, going to the true light leads to life. Tonight, we're going to see that Jesus declares himself to be the light of the world. However, as I've already said, just because he is the light, it doesn't mean that all of us will benefit from his light. We are warned not to reject him as the light. So let's read in John chapter 8. We're going to read from verses 12 to 20. So please follow along as we read God's word together. This is after the woman who was caught in adultery. And Jesus, he says, "You who are out, anyone who's without sin, cast the first stone at her." They all leave. It's just Jesus and the woman. And then he's still in the temple. Okay. And then it says, again, Jesus spoke to them. So the crowd is still there, saying, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Now, the Pharisees either came back, or this is a new group of Pharisees. Look what happens in verse 13. So the Pharisees said to him, "You are bearing witness about yourself. Your testimony is not true." And Jesus answered, "Even if I do bear witness about myself, my testimony is true. For I know where I came from and where I am going. But you do not know where I come from or where I am going. You judge or discern according to the flesh." I'll explain that later. "I judge no one. Yet even if I do judge, my judgment is true. For it is not I alone who judge, but I and the Father who sent me. In your law it is written that the testimony of two people is true. I am the one who bears witness about myself, and the Father who sent me bears witness about me." They said to him, therefore, "Where is your Father?" Jesus answered, "You know neither me nor my Father. If you knew me, you would know my Father also." These words he spoke in the treasury as he taught in the temple, but no one arrested him because his hour had not yet come. All right, in verse 12, which is really the big boof crescendo of the passage, sometimes it builds and builds and builds and builds and boom, main point. In this passage, it's announced right from the get-go and then things are applied and explained after the thesis or the main point of the passage. The main point of the passage is that Jesus declares himself to be the light of the world. Okay? Jesus declares himself to be the light of the world. You and I must come to grips with that. Okay? If you want to call Jesus a light, you are disagreeing with his declaration. If you want to say he is not light, you are disagreeing with his declaration. If you want to say... that, you know, he is a small light, whatever you want to call it, you are disagreeing with his declaration. In this context, the Feast of Booths is over. We talked about what that was several weeks ago. Jesus has just stunned a group of Pharisees who, if you remember, they dragged a woman caught in the very act of adultery before him. And they thought, "We've got him pinned. If he says, forgive her, we can say, you don't obey the law of Moses. If he says, stone her, we can say, you're not a friend of sinners, and he'll be in trouble with Rome." And he was caught, right? And then they wanted to discredit him. And Jesus, the most wise man who ever lived, said, "You who is without sin, throw the first stone at her." And what happened? They all left. Just Jesus and the woman. Then Jesus says, "I do not condemn you. Go sin no more." He forgives this woman. What grace, right? But the Pharisees are still angry. They still want to discredit him. So they come back, but we'll get to that in a minute. Jesus declares that he is the light of the world in the temple to a group of people that he is teaching. This is the second of seven what are in the Gospel of John, I am statements. Okay? Anyone remember what the first one was from John 6? Jesus says, I am the... Anyone remember? You know, you got it? No, well, that's coming in 14. Starts with a B. Bread of life. I am the bread of life, right? That's what he declared in John 6. Now he's declaring in John 8, I am the light of the world. This is connected to the first chapter of the book of John, where it says, in him, that's Jesus, was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. So Jesus says, I am the light of the world. Two important things to remember about this statement, okay? Number one, Jesus is the universal light. Meaning he's the light for the world, not just the Jews, but for the world, all people. He is their light. There is no other light available to anyone in the world, which leads to the second point. He is exclusive. He's the exclusive light. He's the only light, and he's the light for everyone. So he's not the only light, and he's only for the Jews. Okay? And he's not an option for light, and you can choose another from another religion or what have you. He is the light of the world. And what does he mean when he calls himself the light of the world? Jesus once again is claiming he is God. In the Old Testament, there are many allusions to God being light. I'm going to read a few to you. Psalm 27, verse 1. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Psalm 119, 105. Your word, and what did John 1 call Jesus? In the beginning was the what? Word. Your word is a lamp unto my feet and a light for my path. Isaiah 60, 19 says, it prophesies that the Lord would be his people's everlasting light. And 1 John 1, 5 declares, God is light. What is light? Really, in short, guys, he's the truth. He is going to tell you what life is, where life is, what life's about, who life's about. What's wrong with you? How you can be made right with God? How you can know God? How you can walk and live a faithful life? God is light. He shines truth to the world. Which, let me ask you this. If Jesus needs to come and be everyone's light, that presupposes what? All of us are naturally in what? Darkness. We're in darkness. Some application points that Jesus himself makes. He says to follow him. Israel, when they were wandering in the wilderness for 40 years, they followed a cloud by day and a pillar of fire or light by night to know where they were going. We are in darkness. But then Jesus says, those who follow him will not be in darkness. And following the truth, following the light, leads to life. Listen to what he says again in verse 12. I am the light of the world. Listen to his application. Whoever follows me, follows the light, will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. Imagine going through a labyrinth. You know what that is? Like an ancient kind of maze with different things that are out to get you, right? How many of you have ever seen maybe like an Indiana Jones movie with all the booby traps and things, like the ball that rolls or the swords that come trying to whack off his head, and he's trying to navigate through it, right? Going through this world, especially as a sinner, are many things out to destroy you. Your flesh, the devil, his minions, your friends who are bad examples, the world. And Jesus says, I am the light of life. If you follow me, you will not walk in darkness. You will have the light of life, the light that leads to life. Follow it and you will come home. It's almost like being lost in a cave. And if you were in a cave, would you follow the guy who says, I know where I'm going, but neither of you have a light? Or would you follow the ranger who comes in there with a flashlight and says, follow me? Kind of makes sense, right? He said he'd follow the ranger too. Okay. So I have a question for you. Before we move on to the Pharisees, this is the question you got to ask yourself as we look at them. What will you do with this claim? What have you done with this claim? Jesus has claimed that he is both the universal light and the exclusive light. We will not find truth within ourselves, within science, within self-help books, social media influencers, celebrities, songs, etc. The light of the truth that will lead us so that we don't walk in darkness is Christ alone. Believer, if you've already followed the light, I beg you, stay in that light. Continue to follow that light. When you veer off into the darkness, run back to the light, because you know where that light is found, in the Word, with God's people. We must respond to Christ's claim. The Pharisees did. Number two, well, first, Jesus declares himself to be the light of the world. Number two, the Jewish leaders deny and attempt to discredit Jesus as the light. See that in verse 13. Look at their reaction. Without skipping a beat, this is what they say. So the Pharisees said to him, "You are bearing witness about yourself. Your testimony is not true." Now, there are times when this is valid, okay? You ever meet somebody at a party or, you know, on a sports team, and you're kind of getting to know them a little bit, and they're just going on and on and on and on and on about themselves and their accomplishments and their achievements, and you're just like, this doesn't sound legit, right? Like, you dunked, dude, you're 5'2". Come on, right? Like, you start to question the validity of what they're saying because they're the only one who is telling you. However, if a couple of friends that you have are like, "No, dude, I was there. I saw it with my eyes." Is that a little more credible? So there's some credibility to what they're saying, but we're going to see the problem in a minute. But right away, the Pharisees, probably the same group of people, I think, that brought the woman to him, they probably came back with another plan at some time. They challenge him to discredit Jesus. They contradict his claim. They say, "What you are saying is not true. What you say about yourself is a lie." They tell the light of the world that he walks and is leading others into darkness. How ironic is that? Isn't that crazy? Connection again to John chapter 1, the prologue. Remember, it said in verse 11 of chapter 1, "He came to his own," that's the Jewish people, "and his own people did not receive him." Okay. What's their basis? You have a lack of witnesses. All right, the Levitical law requires two witnesses in order to condemn somebody to death. Jesus' own words were asserting that his testimony is in alignment with the Father and others. Oh, wait, I skipped ahead. My apologies. Jesus' own words, they were saying the law requires two people to condemn someone. The second point, John 5:31, Jesus said, "If I alone bear witness about myself, my testimony is not true." So they're probably either saying, "Look, you said back then that if you're bearing witness about yourself, what you're saying is not true." So that could be what they're saying. Well, there's a couple problems with their argument, okay? Their arguments actually stink once you hold them up. Number one, the Levitical law that said you need two witnesses, that dealt with condemning someone to death, okay? So that would be like somebody coming in and saying, "I saw Hannah murder somebody," okay? Now, by the law, she should be put to death. But if I'm the only one saying that, they can't condemn her because it's just me. But if me and someone else are like, "We saw it, it happened," then you can put them to death. And the same thing for adultery. Is that the scenario here? Yes or no? With Jesus' claims, is it about murder or adultery? No, it doesn't apply here. Second thing, though, Jesus in John chapter 5, all that he was saying is, if I alone bear witness about myself, and in the context, apart from the Father, meaning if I am saying this but not the Father, then it's not true. But the whole point of John chapter 5 was this. Jesus bore witness about himself, and his witness about himself was in alignment with whose? God the Father. So their arguments stunk. The Pharisees had no legitimate reason for rejecting Jesus' claim. They hid from the light. They resisted the light. They tried to overcome it, as John 1 tells us, but they could not. Their hearts were hardened. Young people, this is the sinful human response to truth. When we are exposed by truth, we seek any and every way possible to run, to get the light off of us. Oh, we're very quick to jump on the truth if it makes an enemy of ours look bad. Okay? Oh, like if some guy that you don't like or gal on a sports team is bragging about how good they are, you're like, "Yo, get their stats. Let's expose them." We like truth when it's maybe shining on somebody else and exposing them. But when it exposes us, oh boy, we run. We deny it. We'll come up with anything to say it's not true. This is what Paul refers to in Romans 1, where he says,
that through our unrighteousness, before we know Christ, we suppress the truth. We live wicked lives to shove truth down because we know God is real. We know He is true, but we don't want to admit it because that means we're accountable to someone who made us. You and I have no reason legitimately to reject Jesus' claim. At the foundation of every rejection of Christ is stubborn unbelief. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't have questions or doubts. I'm saying what these Pharisees are doing, totally rejecting his claim, at the root of that is stubborn unbelief. So what does Jesus do? Number three, Jesus differentiates himself from the Jewish leaders. He separates us. He's going to say, this is what I'm like, and this is what you're like. All right? He's going to expose them even further as the light. Look at verses 14 through 16. Look at how he responds. Jesus answered, even if I do bear witness about myself, my testimony is true. Why? For I know where I came from and where I am going. But you, unlike me, do not know where I come from or where I am going. You judge according to the flesh. I judge no one. And you can't see it in the English, but what he's saying is, you judge according to the flesh. I judge no one according to the flesh. That's the idea. Yet even if I do judge or make a judgment, my judgment is true. For it is not I alone who judge, but the Father who sent me. That's very much in line with chapter 5. Jesus is truth. He will not tolerate lies about himself. He did that one time. When was the one time Jesus let people slander him, lie about him, and kept his mouth shut? Say it. The cross. When he was before Pilate, he kept his mouth shut, didn't say a word, like a lamb who was silent before his shearers, so he opened not his mouth. You want to know why I believe Jesus didn't open his mouth when he stood before Pilate and he was being accused of all of these things? You want to know why? One, he was submitting to the Father's will. I think that's the main thing. Number two, whose place was Jesus standing in? Yours, mine, and yours. And you want to know what the Jews were accusing Jesus of? Maybe not the exact thing, but the principle behind it. All the accusations hurled at Jesus because he was standing in our place, in a sense, in a metaphorical way, I would say, they were true. Because he was standing in our place. And if he was standing in our place, he couldn't deny what he was being accused of because it was as if he himself had done them. That's how he was being punished. Does that make sense? I don't want you to misunderstand that, okay? But besides that one time, Jesus is true and he will not just let his creatures blaspheme him. His testimony is true. How does he know his testimony is true? Well, one, he knows his origin. What's his origin? Again, back to chapter 1. That's why it's very important to look at the whole book when we study the Bible. In the beginning was the Word. And the Word was what? With God, and the Word was God. And what was the first thing I said? In the beginning. Jesus' origin is from the Father, and he's eternal. Okay? What the creeds teach us, the Bible teaches us in John 3, that Jesus is eternally begotten of the Father. He, in a sense, flows from the Father, equally God with the Father. He also knows where he is going. He's going back to the Father, but how is he going to go back to the Father? Where is he stopping first? What's his mission? What's the only way the God-man is going to go back to the Father and ascend into heaven? What is it? It's a simple Sunday school answer. Yeah, what did God want him to do? Yeah, go to the cross. Exactly. Bingo. The cross was his mission. So he knew he was not only God, but he was the Messiah, the sent one. He knew exactly who he was. However, the Jewish leaders, they didn't know his origin and they didn't know his destiny. They didn't know his mission. You want to know what Jesus says? You judge according to the flesh. You're thinking about me and deciding who I am based on external things. That's what the flesh means here. Earthly things. You know what Jesus' origin was to them? Nazareth. How could you be great? You're from Nazareth. You know he could be great? Because he's not just from Nazareth.
He's from glory. He's God himself. Jesus' destiny to them, you're just a humble rabbi who loves sinners and the lowly. That's your mission, to eat with sinners and prostitutes and the poor? Ugh. Jesus' mission was to take the sins of his people on his back, carry them to Golgotha, be nailed to a wooden cross, have God pour out his wrath upon him for the sins of his people and cry out, "It is finished," and deal with our sin before God so you and I could be brought home. That's his mission. They missed that completely because they didn't think they needed a Savior. And then Jesus says, even if I do judge, my judgment is true. Because he doesn't judge people based on external things. He doesn't look at you and say what is wrong with you or see the external things. Jesus looks at you and sees that you're valued because you are made in God's image and sees what's in your heart. John 2, 23, 25, it says that Jesus knows what's in all mankind's hearts. And his judgment is true because his judgment is the same as the Father's. Listen, I want to make an application here. This is very important. Because in our world today, you might be tempted to think that Christianity is not true because of everything the world is throwing at you. Jesus does not need any human endorsement. None. Jesus does not need anyone, whether it's Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk or Joe Biden or Kamala Harris or Donald Trump. He does not need human endorsement. None of it. We need his endorsement. We need him to tell us who we are. Otherwise, we're lost. What Jesus says about us, my brothers and sisters, is true. And just like these Pharisees, as sinners, even as believers, guys, we are prone to make decisions about people, especially God, based on appearances, on the amount of followers someone has, how it makes us feel, someone's attractiveness or a program's attractiveness. And look, it's not wrong to make certain judgments based on outward or earthly appearances, right? Get a little silly for a minute. At a county fair competition, the fattest pig is decided based on the fattest pig. Okay? There's nothing deep about that, at least not in my, I don't have any experience in that, but my knowledge. However, the decision for who should be promoted at a job, who should be president of the United States, should be based upon realities much deeper than who has the best smile, the prettiest face, the nicest hair, etc. And yet, as sinners, we make big decisions based on those things all the time. Who we hang out with, who we'll give respect to, based on things like that. We judge people, including God, based on external appearances. We're just like the Pharisees in our hearts. Jesus, though, is not indifferent to our judgment of him. Number 4, Jesus denounces the Jewish leaders, especially their discernment. Look at verses 17 through 19. This is what he continues to say about them. In your law, it is written that the testimony of two people is true. I am the one who bears witness about myself, and the Father who sent me bears witness about me. And they said to him, therefore, where is your Father? And Jesus answered, you know neither me nor my Father. If you knew me, you would know my Father also. It's funny. It goes right back to the law. They just tried to trip him up with the law, and now Jesus is using that against them. In a sense, he condemns them with their own words. You need two witnesses, Jesus, and you don't have them. And he says, okay, according to your law, he says your law in order to make the point, the law you love so much, you need two witnesses. You're correct. Well, guess who the two main witnesses are? Me, the Son of God, and who else? The Father. Now you're asking, what was the Father's testimony? As one commentator put it, listen up. What was the Father's testimony? There were Jesus' miraculous works, which were the mighty deeds of God done by and through Jesus. There was the testimony of John the Baptist, the prophet like Elijah, whom the Father sent, that's what John himself says, to prepare the way for his Son. Finally, there was the testimony of the Old Testament scriptures, including that of the Pharisees' own beloved Moses. Jesus in John 5:46 says, if you believed Moses, you would believe me because he wrote of me, Jesus said. There were testimonies galore for the Pharisees to know who Jesus was. They simply rejected it. You want to know something? And this is something to examine our own hearts. This struck me. The Pharisees were known to be passionate about the law, obeying the law, adhering to the law. They created laws for laws. They weren't really passionate about the law. They were passionate about using the law for their own gain, their own selfish gain. They wanted to use the law to make themselves look good and to have power. And Jesus was a threat to that. They had unbelievable heart and unbelief. What is their response? This is what they say. Well, where's your father? Now, this is one of two things. One, they're thinking so earthly, they're actually asking where Joseph is. Now, Joseph is, most commentators believe he's dead. He's long gone. Okay. Well, we know that he is because Jesus gave his mother Mary to John to take care of him when he was on the cross. So they might be asking where his physical father is, or at best, at best they're blind, at worst they're blasphemous. They know he's talking about God the Father, and they're mocking him. But Jesus responds, you don't know my Father. You know why? Because you do not know me. If you knew me, you would know my Father. Jesus and the Father are one. So let me bring this to a head here. Jesus comes and says, I am the light of the world. And what does light do? It begins with an I. Illuminate. Exposes. It exposes us. You want to know what the main point that Jesus came though? The main one he was coming to shed light on, to reveal to us? Who? The Father. John 1:18. I'm going to read it to you. It's very important. Again, John 1 is huge. John 1:18. Listen to what it says. No one has ever seen God, talking about the Father. But then it says, the only God who is at the Father's side, who's that? Who is that? Who is God at the God the Father's side? That's Jesus. He, Jesus, has made him known. Do you want to know what the light of the world shines light on for our darkened hearts? He shows us God. And Jesus is saying to the Pharisees, because you won't accept me as the light, you don't know the Father. Because you can't know the Father unless you know me. In John 14:6, one of you already alluded to it. I think it was it Jack? Yeah. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the who? The Father except through me, Christ says. God, young people, is the test of truth. Jesus says, you don't know me because you don't know God. God cannot be known except through Jesus. He is the light. You can be as religious as you want. You don't know God if you reject Jesus. Same goes for your friends. He is the exclusive light. When you share Christ with your friends, they do not accept if they tell you that they're Jewish or they're Mormon or they're Jehovah's Witnesses or they're a Catholic, but they're not coming to Christ as their Savior. But they're coming to God with their works. If they don't come through Christ, they will never see God. I plead with you to share Jesus in that way. Last point, and we'll wrap up. Number 5, the Jewish leaders despise and want to destroy Jesus, yet they don't. Whoa, verse 20. Jesus does not shy away from truth, and they hate him. Look at verse 20. These words he spoke in the treasury, as he taught in the temple. So he's right in the hub still. He hasn't left. But no one arrested him because they were afraid or because they agreed. No, what does it say? Because his hour had not yet come. His hour is referred to constantly in the Gospel of John. It simply means moment of time. The moment that he was to go to the cross was already established by God, and God was not ready for this to happen yet. The Jewish leaders hate him, and the Jewish leaders are powerless against him. Jesus is the light, and the darkness did not, in this moment, and will not ever overcome it. Young person, I'm going to close with this. Let Jesus expose your heart. Let him shine on you. Don't run from the light, run to the light. If you hide in darkness, your sin, like a bacteria and a disease, will grow and fester and destroy you.
And that includes believers. If you know Christ, come back to the light. When you live outside of the light, if you ever do science projects, where does mold grow? Darkness, dark, damp places. Run to Christ. Let him expose you, because he doesn't just expose you to say, ha, look at your sin. He's exposing you and at the same time exposing the Father so that you see truth through him who is grace, and you will receive forgiveness and pardon. Run to the light of life. Jesus opened with these words. I'm going to close with them. Again, Jesus spoke to them saying, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me, no matter who you are, what you have done, what you haven't done, it says, whoever follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have, guaranteed words there, the light of life. Let's pray to that light of life.